Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to this Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening edition of Head On. I'm Bob, and I'm awfully glad you've chosen to download the podcast, listen live, or listen on the rerun stream. I'm just doggone tickled to know that you're part of this process, all of you. And I want to start the program by thanking people for stepping up to the plate last night and getting us halfway through April, fundraising-wise. I am in sincere gratitude, as are all of us here at the Horn. You'll be happy to know, among other things, that the chat room, which so many of you enjoy, and I hope more of you enjoy and take advantage of, the chat room is paid for another year. Yay! So that's, you know, that's one more dog away from the door. One more lupine pest off the porch, if you know what I mean. So thank you, and you all know who you are. You're making this possible, and slowly but surely, like Mark was talking about, the sea changes coming around. You're changing media as well, by your participation in the Horn. You're expanding the concept of dialogue. You are, moreover, redefining what broadcasting means. I had an email exchange earlier today wherein the person I was writing with noted that he was told by a scriptwriter once upon a time, or a script reader, not a writer, a reader, you know, Hollywood type, you know, goes over treatments and scripts and so forth. Hollywood doesn't look for TV scripts of the highest quality. They look for TV scripts that will best support advertising. And that's heart and soul what I have said for so long. Where advertisers and broadcasters are concerned, it could be 3 hours of an idiot whistling turkey in the straw, but if there are a million people listening to it, then some advertiser is going to want to make sure that they try to sell you their soap. Commercial broadcasting is about delivering potential purchasers to product sellers. And what happens in the middle, in between the commercials, doesn't matter. Hence, Flush Flimball, The Hannity Job, Beck, O'Reilly, the whole filthy crowd. But you're making it possible by supporting the Horn. You're making it possible for that paradigm to change. In fact, for the worm to turn. And I can't tell you how grateful we all are. Thank you very, very much. Now, where to start this evening? I'm so sick of right-wing lunacy, I could scream. But some of this has to be mentioned. I guess the last few ripplings of the teabagging of America yesterday. Toward the end of the program last night, I shared with you the audio and the remarks made by Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry. expressing support for secession. Don't just laugh that off. Don't. You know, 150 years ago, there were people who laughed off the idea of secession, and it might not have cost them anything, but it cost thousands and thousands of Americans their lives. The ones it didn't kill, it maimed. And the ones it didn't maim, it changed forever. Don't laugh it off. It's real. And it's dangerous. After Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry made his remarks in support of secession, Glenn Beck, Weepy Glenn came out and endorsed Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry's secessionist madness, ramblings. He was at the Alamo. Beck was, of course. He was at the Alamo. Symbol of white folks fighting for the right to own slaves. And this is what went down. Maybe.
Landed right in the middle of a massive tea party. Glenn, I see that the beautiful sight behind you. It's quite amazing. Where are you?
I am in San Antonio, Texas.
It looks like you're there with your friends. Are these people you know?
Greta, when I heard about the tea parties, quite honestly, I thought that it was too early for the tea parties because we hadn't been hit by the taxes yet that have to come. But I have to tell you, when the tea parties started to roll and everybody started to do them.
Wait a minute. Did he just admit that nobody's been hit by a tax increase? That this stuff was phony and astroturf? Yeah, he did, didn't he?
I found out that they were doing a tea party here at the Alamo, and I thought there wasn't a better place to do it.
Nope, no better place than the Alamo. No better place than the last stand of a bunch of prejudiced, racist bigots willing to try to fend off the entire Mexican army in order to maintain their right to own other human beings. No, Glenn Beck, there's no place better than the Alamo for your little right-wing shindig.
This is the place. Everybody's always heard, you know, draw a line in the sand. This is where it happened. They drew a line in the sand.
Yes, they drew a line in the sand and said, on this side of the line in the sand, we're going to have us some slaves. And you Mexicans can just shut the hell up or go home. Well, they didn't quite work like that. Going to have slaves. Going to have a line in the sand for slavery. Woo-wee.
Crowd and found out, you know, where a lot of these people are from. I know many are from Texas, but have some traveled.
Many were from Mars, apparently.
From great distances to be part of this.
You know, I've met people today from Minnesota. I've met people here today from New York City. I'm Jersey, New Jersey, California, Texas. People are here from all over the country, but I tell you, Greta, Texans understand a republic better than anybody else in the country.
Do they now? Do they? A republic that was founded on the right to own slaves? Just checking. That republic? Okay.
You know, I talked to the governor earlier today, and I don't know how popular or not popular he is here, but I tell you,
They love them some good hair.
True to an awful lot of people, not just in Texas, but I think a lot of people all around the country. There are movements. They've taken the original documents between James Madison and Thomas Jefferson, and in several states, I believe it's 23 now, they are passing this in their legislature, which says you don't have any more rights in the Constitution than those that are outlined, and federal government, you need to back off.
Are you hearing the same thing I'm hearing? I haven't just been sucked down a wormhole or something, and I'm in that universe where Captain Kirk is a bad man and Leonard Nimoy is Mr. Spock is a scheming guy getting ready. No, I'm not in that universe yet, am I? Because I feel like I am. I feel like I've gone down a rabbit hole. These people, these right wingers. I think it's official now. They have declared their desire to see an end of the United States of America. They have declared their desire to see an end to the Union that so many thousands fought and died and bled to preserve. These wingnut bastards have decided to spit on the blood shed at Gettysburg. To spit on the blood shed at Sharpsburg. To spit on the blood shed twice at Manassas, at Chancellorsville, the Wilderness, Franklin, Atlanta, Vicksburg, to spit on the memory of Abraham Lincoln, to spit on the struggles of every person who has dared call themselves an American, him or herself an American, for the last 200 years. And it is infuriating to behold. I've talked from time to time about all the things that I never expected to see in my life. And some of the things that I did expect to see. It was just a few nights ago that I said that, you know, by now, by the time that by my age, I had an expectation, reasonable or un, that we would all be puttering around in those little George Jetson air cars by now. We're not. I never expected to see this country make the same dumbass mistake that it made in Vietnam, but we did. I never expected to see the crimes of Richard Nixon pale by comparison to the crimes of another Republican president, but I did. And I damn sure never thought I would hear the word secession in my lifetime. But now I have. That is the undercurrent of these historically stunted, ignorant, stupid right-wingers. Secession. I can't get that word out of my brain. Secession. Never having expected to even hear the fringes of this debate in my lifetime, I now understand what a visceral, hateful, gut-wrenching response that word has for anyone who loves this nation. Secession conjures up images of Jefferson Davis and Judah Benjamin and all those fools who dragged this country through an abattoir of 5 years' duration, who soaked this nation in its own blood, directly and proximately as a result of nothing more than their own hubris, their own arrogance, and their own ignorance. And now there is another generation that wants to do it again. And it seems like we're the only ones talking about it. That we're the only ones who are profoundly offended at this notion. And I don't know what to make of it. And you know, this didn't just happen. Remember, the vice presidential nominee of the Republican Party in the last presidential election is the wife of a man who belongs to a secessionist party of long standing in Alaska. Secession. What do these fools think they'll get from it? What are they going to take with them? These idiots claim that they've been taxed enough already, TEA, taxed enough already. The Alamo! They're at the Alamo! The Alamo is a national park! National parks are paid for by... come on, anybody! Taxes. So they're protesting taxes at a taxpayer-funded site that would have long ago been reduced to condominiums were it not protected by the federal government that these morons, these fools, profess to despise. You know, back during the Bush era, those 8 tormented years about which we will find ourselves talking later in the program, I am certain. Back during the Bush era, we objected to things like the abandonment of principles of habeas corpus. One of the bedrock, one of the foundation stones of our social contract and compact manifested inside by the Constitution of the United States. Ah, the Alamo is owned and run by the Sisters of the Republic of Texas. That's okay. The teabaggers were partying on public lands in other places, Washington, D.C. But it is still public space. Whether it's being maintained by the Sisters of the Republic of Texas, or by the federal government, or by the state of Texas. It is maintained as a space for the public, as were all these places where the teabagging took place. Thank you, John. I appreciate the heads up, brother. These fools... these mad fools would rend this country apart. And we've had our fun at their expense. But I suspect that the time for joking is over. Texas understands a republic better than any other state in the Union. Might wanna have a little conversation with some folks in Massachusetts at a little place called Lexington and Concord. little knoll called Breed's Hill. Might want to talk to some North Carolinians about a place called King's Mountain, where the drunken hillbillies, literally, saved what would become our republic. Might want to. Might want to just have a little chat. Glenn Beck might, you know, he's a Philly boy, or is now, or was. He might want to wander just a little ways out of the city to a place called Valley Forge. I hear it can be a brutal place in the winter. And see if he can look around there and still tell himself that Texas understands a republic best. I would submit that a place that wanted to establish its republic almost solely for the purposes of owning other human beings understands a republic not at all. But that's me, and I think these people are fools. Let's let them prove it some more.
Night and watching your crowd and listening to things that are coming out of Texas, I don't want to be too dramatic, but it almost seems like Texas is looking to secede from the rest of the nation.
Listen to them cheer. Looking to secede from the rest of the nation. Texas, can you feed yourself? Texas, can you keep your own roads up? Texas, can you defend yourself? No, no, and no. But listen to them cheer for secession.
I mean, I don't know, can we get this on the jib back here? Get this on the jib back over here. This is Texas independence. Understand is I lived in Texas for about 4 years, and I have to tell you, when you first come down to Texas, you're like, okay, the boots and the hats and the horns on the car, and within a year, you want the boots and the hats and the horns on the car. And the reason is, correct me if I'm wrong, these people love America. They just think Texas does America best.
Oh, really? Anyone want to talk about the high school dropout rate in Texas? Infant mortality? Maternal postpartum death? Literacy? Teen pregnancy? Sexually transmitted diseases? Texas rides pretty high on all those lists. This isn't Texas bashing. That is not my purpose. I would not. I know that horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner loves his Texas and loves it for the right reasons and understands its flaws as well. By virtue of what Rick Goodner does to put food on the table and keep the rent paid, so to speak, he deals with a lot of the problems that these people in this crowd help create. Broken minds, shattered marriages, shattered families, destroyed hopes. And mangled futures. That's about enough audio from Glenn Beck. I'm pretty sick. But I tell you what, there's one other thing this fool said, And I mean fool in the strongest possible sense. On his radio show, Glenn Beck said yesterday, this is a quote, "You can't convince me that the Founding Fathers wouldn't allow you to secede. The Constitution is not a suicide pact. States have a right to back out." The blood with which that ignorant statement is freighted is frightening to me. Do you realize these people cheering for secession in the background would kill you for saying no? That is the murderous frenzy that Fox and right-wing Republican think tanks are trying to whip up in this country. And I am not kidding you when I say that it causes me sleepless nights. I love this country. I don't do the phony patriotism and walk around, you know, if you love America, just go shopping. No, I love this country. And the love I feel for this country is a love that is born of the devotion of my people, my forebears, long molding in the ground, who in many instances gave up their very lives to see that this country would exist. And these mad fools in front of the Alamo would spit on that. And for the love and honor and respect I bear for my forebears and all those others who gave what Abraham Lincoln called the last full measure of devotion, for those people, I despise these in the square in San Antonio. I loathe them. The bare mention of the word secession just makes my skin crawl. And they're not done. Not by a long shot. Keep your ears open and your eyes peeled. This is not some joke. This is the beginning, not the end, of something wicked this way comes. And another generation, my daughters, my son, or a generation beyond them, my granddaughter, my grandson, may in their adulthood look up and ask, what were those damned fools thinking when they tore this country to pieces? Your thoughts? I'd love to have them. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, and email rolls in to Bob, B-O-B, Kincaid, K-I-N-C-A-I-D, bobkincaid@gmail.com. Let's get with it. This is The Horn.
If you ever get the chance to go down, cause you're lonely, sing the blues down in Dallas. Take it from me, don't go and cry. They've done it to me.
like me just can't be free. The promo man won't let us be. If the people knew to get away, I'm real sure they'd be dead.
Texas. Where, as I recall, we had a story a couple of years ago about a faith-based foster home for abused children where those children were dragged behind trucks to punish them for misdeeds.
Yeah. Texas just knows how to do America better than America does. Texas, whose Supreme Court has ruled that a young woman who was physically molested by churchmen during an exorcism, that Supreme Court ruled that that young woman does not have a right to sue them for damages for what they did to her against her will and without her consent, because to allow a verdict against a church in Texas would violate the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and impinge upon their freedom of religion. Texas. Texas. Whose legislature passed a law stating that a child can give a completely bogus, wrong answer on a test in school, and as long as he says, "Jesus made me write this," the teacher has to count it as correct. Texas, that passed a law stating that any child or anyone on any school, everything has to stop if someone wants to pray. Texas. Texas. They know more about republics than any other state in the Union. And if you're just there long enough, you'll want the big boots and the big hat and the cow horns on your car. Texas. Texas, who wants to secede. Texas, whose governor endorsed secession yesterday. And I don't mean to beat on this too hard. If I expect to get an email in a minute saying, "Bob, move on." But that word is like a worm in my brain, secession. Fools! That's the only word I've got. Fools! I could haul out the fun words that have to run little Susie and little Timmy out of the room, but there's no point in it. Fools! 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 Bob, back up the boat. Talk about that Jesus made me write it again, please. Okay. Yes! Miracle math made easy. You got a biology test, and it says, and you've dissected the frog, and you're in Texas, and you take the little electrode, and you put it on the little frog's open nerve on his leg, and the leg goes beep beep and twitches, and the biology test says, why did the frog's leg twitch? Kid writes, Holy Ghost made it twitch. Has to be counted correct. How did we get here? Well, oh my God. I'm not kidding. I'm so not kidding. Wish I was. But I'm really not.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
That's a correct answer on a biology test in Texas. Really? 2 and 2 is 5? Well, 2 plus 2 plus the Spirit of Christ equals 5. Correct answer. It's hard in Texas. Education is extremely difficult. This is not a passing fad. This is the outgrowth of something that's been a long time making. The bigots and the racists and the conservatives got all pissed off when we got serious about voting rights for non-white people. Got even more so with the Civil Rights Act. As mentioned last night, Lyndon Johnson said, the Democratic Party has lost the South for a generation or more. He was right. But it wasn't just the South. It spread. It spread out of the South. It found a home in the weirdo haven. Sorry, I know there's liberals in Utah, but mostly they're not. Utah is a haven for weirdos. The toxin flowed upstream into Idaho. Again, I know there are liberals there, but mostly they're not. And now we have a sickness that is spreading through this nation that goes by various and sundry names, mostly conservative, that threatens the very future of this nation. There was no lesson learned for a lot of these people out of the Civil War. Apparently. And what are they mad at? What are they mad at?
Spending. Taxed enough already.
But if you've seen any of the coverage, you know that yesterday was a marathon Obama hate fest. Chairman Malbama t-shirts were the mild stuff. The eliminationism is spreading. Today, Today it spread to Illinois. A report today in the Chicago Tribune, quoting Representative Mark Kirk, a Repiglican from Illinois, who is mulling a bid for the governor's office there. He was told about reports that Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, who is a Democrat, is contemplating an increase in income taxes to patch a humongous, crippling budget deficit. What was Mark Kirk's response? I have the quote in front of me. I think that the decision to, again, remember, eliminationism. After beating on it for so long now, I think we probably have a pretty good working understanding of what eliminationism means. Mark Kirk responded to the news of a possible tax increase by saying, and I quote, "I think that the decision to raise taxes by 50% in Illinois is political suicide." Now, that's a little dishonest. But then again, Mark Kirk is a Repiglican, so I know I'm being redundant. What Governor Quinn is contemplating is an increase in the tax rate from 3% to 4.5%. But the wingnuts in Illinois all heard 50%. What? What? They're going to take 50% of everything I got? I'm sorry, that's the wrong accent, but you know. Of course, the personal deduction would also be increased as well, but nah, that's too many details. And Mark Kirk is a member of the party whose God Almighty said facts are stupid things. Mark Kirk went on, though, having said that, having used the phrase political suicide. Well, he left the political off in his next comment. This is a quote. Damn it, this is a quote. "I think the people of Illinois are ready to shoot anyone who is going to raise taxes by that degree." Not, "I think the people of Illinois are ready to figuratively shoot." Not, "I think the people of Illinois are ready to politically execute." No, 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 no. "I think the people of Illinois are ready to shoot anyone who is going to raise taxes by that degree." Not surprising, really, though. Almost a year ago, June 2008, Mark Kirk said that he supported a policy, and this is the quote again, "where if we see Obama, there's a shoot-on-sight order." It was one of those moments when he meant to say Osama. But we went through a whole litany of that at one point last year, when the Republicans were deliberately trying to conflate the names of Osama and Obama. "I think the people of Illinois are ready to shoot anyone who is going to raise taxes." Keep your ears open and your eyes peeled, brothers and sisters. Something wicked this way comes. It's carrying a cross, and it's wrapped in a flag. And it thinks it's being abused because people making $250,000 will eventually be paying income taxes at the same rate they were paying them under Bill Clinton and at a lesser rate than they were paying them under Ronald Reagan. and Mark Kirk wants to shoot people. You and I are horrified by statements like this. You and I are sickened by statements like this. But because we live in a slightly different world that's reality-based and where we don't run around talking about who we'd like to shoot, stab, hang, or otherwise kill, we don't understand the joy. We don't understand the excitement. We don't understand the tingling thrill that goes through a right winger when they start talking about killing people. Secession and all that came, all its lessons writ in blood. Hot damn, that'd be fun to have us a civil war, they think. I got a feeling it's going to keep getting hotter. These people are not going away. And no matter how normal you and I are, how committed to peace, how committed to nonviolence we are, they're the ones who are going to get the coverage. Imagine that. That exchange that I played from Fox, that was an exchange between Greta Van Susteren and Glenn Beck. Greta Van Susteren, who got her start on television analyzing the day-to-day events surrounding the trial of a man who slashed his wife's throat. Greta Van Susteren has been trading on death and gore for as long as she has been in front of a camera. And now she's out there actively helping the likes of Rick Goodhair Perry and Glenn Beck promote the idea of the dissolution of these United States for which so many have bled and fought and died. That is... almost more than... I'll find some other stuff to talk about, because God knows there is. But we kind of had to put the cap on all of this to get an idea of where it had gone and where it continues to go. The right wing has still not figured out that George Bush issued or commissioned the right-wing extremism report. Representative Peter King is a repiglickin from New York who doesn't have sense enough to pour piss out of a boot with directions on the heel. And he was he got all fulminated earlier today. Fulminating away on MSNBC. Says that looking for right-wing extremist terrorists, domestic terrorists in the United States, well, that we've got our focus all wrong.
And to put that in the context of a police director, and this is going out to police departments all over the country, wow. And you can't say look out for Islamic terrorists, you can't say look out for 9/11 type terrorists, but you can say look out for potential terrorists from returning soldiers, returning GIs, or pro-life demonstrators. It really shows a mindset, which I'm concerned about it.
But here's what she said.
These are routine intelligence assessments that are made for state and local law enforcement. They're for situational awareness. They're not accusatory and are meant to be accusatory. The last thing we want to do at the Department of Homeland Security is infringe on anyone's constitutional or civil rights. I think everybody needs to take a deep breath. There was a lot of Washington spin going on yesterday about this report. But all it was saying is, look, There's a constant and constantly changing threat environment in the United States. Our job is to protect against terrorism, whether it comes from abroad or internally.
Hmm. Was that enough? What do you make of that as a response to the concern that we put out there?
You're only allowed to ask me one question. Seriously, on that, first of all, her answer was totally disingenuous. That department, and she has never put out a report talking about look out for mosques, look out for Islamic terrorists in our
Jesus
country, look out for the fact that very few Muslims come forward to cooperate with the police. If they had sent out a report saying that, there'd be hell to pay.
The New York Times,
everybody would be screaming. But instead, she sent this to police around the country, and she talks about intelligence. There's no intelligence saying we have to worry about veterans. Anyone, you have to worry about anybody else coming back, or anyone else, any college student, or you said jungle.
Yeah, because, you know, no, we haven't had any anybody coming back with their brains scrambled from Iraq and doing horrible, horrible things. No, hasn't happened. Hasn't happened. I mean, we'll ignore the ones that did and say that they didn't. Because the problem is mosques. Mosques. You heard that. Of course, Peter King is a bigot. You know, I'm on the internet because of a variety of reasons, but one of those is that the Horn could not exist in a for-profit broadcast medium, because the minute that I got behind the microphone and said there are too many churches in the United States, I'd be killed by one of those churchers. All my advertising would be pulled. All the stuff that makes for-profit broadcasting work would stop working for me if I said there are too many churches in this country. But Peter King, a bigot, a repiglican from New York? Well, back in 2007, he said, and I quote, "Unfortunately, we have too many mosques in this country." Now, if he had said, "We have too many synagogues," the Anti-Defamation League, Abraham Foxman, AIPAC, and rightly everybody of conscience in this country would say, "You bigot, you anti-Semite, you sick man." But he can say there are too many mosques. Really? Too many mosques? I mean, jeepers, even in New York City, how many mosques are there? I haven't heard the opening bell on Wall Street drowned out by the call of the muezzin from the top of the minaret lately. Peter King has said that Muslims are the enemy among us. He has claimed that 80 to 85% of mosques in this country are controlled by Islamic fundamentalists. And in his world, right-wing terrorists don't exist. In his world, a man named Adkisson didn't walk into the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist congregation into a children's play and start shooting. In Peter King's world, a disaffected wingnut didn't walk into the offices of the Arkansas Democratic Party and blow away the party chair. It didn't happen. In Peter King's world, a man did not lure the police in Pittsburgh to his home and murder three of them in cold blood. It didn't happen. It just didn't happen. So, in Peter King's world, we're all equal. It's just that violent wingnuts are a little more equal, and we can't say anything about them. Even if the report we're talking about was commissioned by George W. Bush. Coming up, Brad Friedman and Desi and the Green News Report. Your calls, should you see fit to make them. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is a breath of sanity in a mad, mad nation. This is the Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, April 16, 2009.
Goodbye, Tax Day 08. Hello, Tax Day 09. Birds take the long way home, plus solar energy in space.
Sounds good, Muppets. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this is your Green News Report. Okay, then, here's Miss Piggy, Desi Doyen, with the Green News.
Well, first, tax day is over for another year, at least for those who filed their 2008 taxes on time. But before you completely blot it out of your mind, now is a good time to plan ahead for your 2009 taxes. Specifically, the greatly expanded tax credit for homeowners who make energy efficiency upgrades in 2009. For example, starting this year, homeowners can deduct 30% of the purchase price of any major upgrades like solar panels.
If I add solar panels to my house, if I had a house, I could deduct 30% of that?
30% of the price of the solar panels will then come straight off the top of your tax bill because it's a tax credit rather than a tax deduction.
Yeehaw, I'll take
indeed.
It.
A new study from a British university says that migratory bird species are facing their biggest threat since the Ice Age due to the effects of climate change moving their migration patterns. This study was published in the Journal of Biogeography. It estimates that some 500 million birds migrate every year from Africa to reach their breeding grounds in Europe and Asia. Their evidence suggests that as global temperatures rise at the end of the century, breeding habits will have to shift farther north, that migratory birds will have to fly farther and longer, and in some cases hundreds of miles, which could have a devastating impact on species, especially those that have to cross the Sahara Desert.
So, well, really? So we would have exhausted birds who couldn't make it all the way down
to their winter grounds in Africa, and also there's the pit stops, the habitats where they have to stop over to eat, to rest,
right,
on the way are also vulnerable as well.
And those are disappearing.
Yes, they are.
Wow.
West Coast electricity utility giant PG&E announced a deal this week with a startup solar company that has a novel idea to get solar power from the sun in space. Now, here's how it would work. The satellites...
As opposed to getting solar power from...
The ground... From the sun hitting the ground. Okay, here, this
but
is how...
But it's still coming from the sun,
okay,
no matter where
yeah,
we...
Yeah, right. Okay, here's how it works. Okay, so the satellites are tricked out with solar panels, and they would capture the sun rays, then convert that solar energy in space at the satellite level to radio frequencies that are then transmitted to Fresno. That is a receiver located on the ground in Fresno, California.
You're transmitting electricity
no,
via
you're
radio
transmitting...
Waves?
You convert the electricity, to the solar energy, into radio frequencies, which is then transferred to the receiving station in California, which would then be reconverted from radio frequency to electricity that would then go out to the grid.
You can transfer solar energy to radio frequency and then back to solar energy?
Well, not back to solar energy, into electricity.
Okay.
I know it sounds strange, but they said that the Pentagon even studied this last year and declared that it was feasible. It's just nobody's ever done it. So part of the thing to be aware of is that PG&E is required to sign contracts that show that they're trying to get renewable energy. That doesn't necessarily mean the contracts have to come to fruition to meet their state mandate.
So this could all be just something they're saying, oh, we're putting some money into this for research, and it may never come to pass.
It may not. We'll
Although it
out.
Seems unlikely that a big company like PG&E would put in money to something that was just a ridiculous scheme, right?
We'll see.
Okay.
A compelling new study reported on in the New York Times.Earth blog and published this week in Journal Nature. Evidence from fossilized coral reefs in Mexico suggests that, yes, sea levels can rise rapidly and actually did so over 100,000 years ago, something along the lines of 6 to 10 feet in under 50 years. The researchers, they studied fossilized coral reefs in Mexico that had been uncovered during construction for a resort, and they compared that with age and growth patterns of reefs elsewhere in the world. Now, critics of the study say the data isn't sufficient to prove that there was rapid sea level rise in the past, but it is certainly provocative enough to merit further study. A nonprofit group has brought a mobile computer classroom to underprivileged children in Uganda. They've powered it with solar panels in a pilot program. They're hoping to train children in Uganda on computers.
This isn't solar panels in space, is it?
No, this is not. This is so. What they do is that they pack up solar panels and computers and tables and teachers and a tent, and they pack it up into their Toyota RAV4, and they drive to remote villages, and they bring their electricity with them because none of these villages have the infrastructure to have their own electricity.
Gotcha.
With the proliferation of products claiming to be green or good for the planet, it's no surprise that some of those products just might not live up to their advertising. A new survey from...
Like the solar energy in space?
That wouldn't necessarily be the same thing.
Radio frequency. I'm still working on that.
I'll show you the study.
I'm going to ponder the...
Okay.
Right.
A new survey from the company that runs the certification program for Canada has listed the seven sins of greenwashing, making... That's the practice of making misleading claims about a product's environmental benefits or a company's practices, and they basically say that, just about all the products they examined committed at least one of these greenwashing sins.
And which we're seeing all of these corporations do, these big oil companies, they're saying, we're doing this green, that green. It's unbelievable how much green stuff there is. A lot of it may not be a reality.
May not be true or a reality.
Greenwashing.
Greenwashing.
Okay, for more information on that and much more, please check out our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Once again, want to welcome our new affiliates, Huffington Post Green and the Head On Radio Network. Check out headonradionetwork.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
This has been, until next week, your Green News Report in space.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Eight and a half minutes past the hour as we enter hour number two of this Thursday evening edition. Finally had a sunny day here in the hills and hollers, and a little bit of warm sunshine on the back of the neck. Just perks you right up. It's been kind of squishy and hooky and not really spring-like around here, and this was refreshing today. Hope it's nice where you are, too. Gotta take Brad Friedman and I have been pals for a long time, but Brad, buddy, that whole solar in space thing is cool. Very cool. And very doable. Very doable indeed. And anything that doesn't cause my mountains to get blown up, I think is worth a look. But, I'm crazy that way. So, I don't know, maybe I'll have to shoot a note off to Brad. Granted, it's PG&E, but at least they're getting ahead of the curve. You know what I mean? They're thinking about this stuff. They're not responding, what we need to do? We need to blow up some more mountains. That's what we need, blow up some mountains, man. Blowing mountains up, that's the way you get your electricity. You know what I mean? A couple of comments from the mailbag. Our buddy Marty writes in and says, so much for them or pig-licking ideals of America first, huh? Yeah. Actually, it's them first. It's Repiglicans first. Not country first. Repiglicans first. And if they can't have it their way, they don't want it at all. And then there's this from our pal Mora. What I want to know, Bob, is which of these geniuses is going to physically fight the new Civil War? They can't all be generals. And I suspect that when push comes to shove, they don't have the guts to be on the battlefield themselves. Let's face it, a helmet would ruin the good hair on Perry. These are sick and dangerous people. Yeah, Maura, they are. And they are not letting up not one blessed dime's worth. And proof of that? Well, just this evening. Who shows up but that worn-out old crook, Tom DeLay? Why they book him on Chris Matthews' show? I have no idea on Hardball. What? Who is this guy? What power does he have? What import does he portend? What policy does he make? Nothing. He's just an ignorant, hate-filled fundamentalist. And money-grubbing con artist, while we're at it. Remember Terry Schiavo? Yeah, him. He was responsible for that. But no, he shows up on Hardball. What's he there for? Well, howdy-do, he's there to talk secession. Wish I was kidding.
Twice this week he's talked about Texas maybe seceding from the Union.
Come on, Chris. This is a governor standing up for the sovereignty of his state. I wish 50 governors were standing up right now for the sovereignty of their state. Somebody needs to speak up about the incredible usurpation of power that's going on in Washington, D.C.
I watch the news. I read the papers. What usurpation of power? Now, we had some usurpations of power, all right. I seem to recall a 400-and-some-odd page document called the Patriot Act that was passed without anybody bothering to read it. There was that. There were usurpations of power in the form of the elimination of habeas corpus from our Constitution that wasn't even done by a constitutional amendment process. I remember that. That usurpation did not take place since January 20th, 2009. No, Tom DeLay, you snake-handling old goon, those happened on your watch. But I digress.
See right now, taking over everything, including businesses. And people are outraged by it. We saw it at the Tea Parties yesterday.
They're taking over businesses? Dear God, they're taking a... They'll be coming for the churches next!
The governor is standing up and fighting for what he believes in, and certainly fighting like a Texan.
You can't secede from the Union.
Texas was a republic. It joined the Union by treaty. There's a process in the treaty by which Texas could divide into five states. If we invoked that, and the last time it was voted on was 1985, if we invoked that, United States Senate would kick us out and nullify the treaty. But they're not going to allow 10 new Texas senators into the Senate. That's
but
how you
can't,
secede.
Can we straighten this out? Can Texas secede from the Union?
No, they can't secede.
Well, why is he talking about it? Twice this week he's talking about seceding from the Union as a threat if he doesn't like the policies coming out of Washington. That's the kind of talk we heard in 1861.
No,
that's what killed 600,000 Americans. Why is he talking like this?
Chris, we have a treaty, as I explained. And it would be the United States that would nullify that treaty because they would not allow 10 Texas senators. That's how it happens. And that's
so we would. So we would kick them out of the Union? That's not talk. That's nutty.
Why are you talking like this, Tom?
Mr. DeLay, you know this isn't a real conversation. This is not serious business.
You're the one who brought it up.
Why are you? Because the governor of your state is still talking about it. I'm asking you, is he out to lunch here or what?
No.
What is it?
Ain't nothing there on his head but hair. Nothing but hair. Ain't no brains in there. Nothing but hair. Hey, that rhymes. I think we might be onto something. These rotten bastards. You know, when I was a little boy, I'd say, I hate that. Whatever that was. And my mother would say, son, life is too long, it is too short, and the world too small to hate anything. Mom, you're paying attention. I hate these bastards. I really do. I despise them. Because they're spitting on your uncle who died at Bastogne. They're spitting on your brother-in-law who died in France. They're spitting on everything that has made this country great, all because they don't like the man who's in the White House. And now they are Jesus, leave it alone, Bob. Move on. Honest to God, really. I gotta. If I don't, I'll honest to God, I'll just close the mic and go home. Secession? The Alaska Independence Party is a secessionist party, I remind you. And there's apparently, from the cheering in the background, a strong secessionist streak in Texas. How long before the others start talking it, too? I mean, South Carolina is the home of this trouble. They're not going to let this go by without putting their voice into the mix. That crazier than a sprayed roach Sanford down there. He'll crank one up. Oh, I bet you. Anybody? Wager? Time frame? How long? Come on. Godfrey Daniel, mother of pearl. It beats the life out of me. This is not to say that ours is a perfect union. Nobody ever said anything about a perfect union. It is a more perfect union. It is an attempt to get better, an ongoing everyday attempt to make this place better than it was the day before, and for one generation to make this nation better than it was a generation before. It is the grandest experiment ongoing in civil society that this world has ever known. And it is fraught with problems. And we screw up frequently. The trick to screwing up, however, is that we learn from our mistakes. Secession was a mistake. And I've learned from it, and you've learned from it, but Tom DeLay didn't learn from it. Rick Goodhair Perry didn't learn from it. Those thousands of screaming idiots on the square, or hundreds, or whatever they were, on the square in San Antonio, didn't learn from it. And this is going to spread like a sick virus. And if people don't call, if you don't see ordinary Americans calling these secessionist bastards out, we're in for trouble. We are in for trouble. And we have trouble. There's trouble in River City. Whether it's health care, the civil rights, equal protection of the law, for groups of otherwise marginalized people, we have problems. Jesus, we've still got a war going on in Iraq that's lasted longer now than World War II. And it's sucking us dry. It is bleeding us out. We got problems. We got a troop buildup going into Afghanistan with no real clear justification for why. And that's going to bleed us some more, physically and fiscally. We got problems. We got plenty of problems to work on. We don't need these goons adding to the tally. You want to go fight somewhere, you dumb bastards? Go sign up, and the military will be glad to have you. And they'll send you over, and you can kill brown people till hell won't hold you. secession. We have problems. We have legal problems. We have infrastructure problems. That out-of-control spending that these freaks are talking about, some of that out-of-control spending, so-called, would be on high-speed passenger rail. And I don't want to just sit here and carp and moan and complain for 3 hours. Got to have some good in here. And this is it. Looky here. Today, the 16th of April, the Obama administration unveiled, announced its plan on a rather grand scale, frankly. The kind of grand scale that inspires a nation. Plans for a whole new national network of high-speed passenger rail. Now, the justification for it? It reduces traffic. Eliminates terrible congestion problems. And reduces dependence on foreign oil. And takes it a little easier on our environment, thereby making it a little bit more likely that we can pass a better America to those next generations we're forever thinking of. There are 10, in this plan, there are 10 potential identified high-speed intercity corridors that'll be federally funded. California, Pacific Northwest, Midwest, Southeast, Gulf Coast, Pennsylvania, Florida, New York, and New England. With significant improvements in the Northeast Corridor that goes from Washington to Boston. Each of the corridors are between 100 and 600 miles long. Oh, I love this. I love this. The trains would travel at up to 150 miles an hour. Federal grants are being put in place for separate individual rail projects that prove themselves ready to go with preliminary engineering and environmental work already done. This is from a CNN story. This is some decent reporting. President Obama said, "My high-speed rail proposal will lead to innovations that change the way we travel in America. We must start developing clean, energy-efficient transportation that will define our regions for centuries to come." Oh, it's going to piss off the right-wingers, though, because in the process of describing this plan, he noted the fact that high-speed intercity rail is working very well for Spain and France. Would have been best to leave that out. I mean, it's true. It is. It does work well in Europe. The trains run on time. I haven't heard anything to the contrary. We've got European listeners who travel by rail and like it. The funding will come through the stimulus package, $787 billion. There's $5 billion in the administration's fiscal 2010 budget. Vice President Joe Biden also chimed in. He said, "We're going to make travel in this country leaner and a whole lot cleaner." Biden knows a little bit about rail travel, having gotten on the train and ridden home to Delaware every day from the Senate. It would be magnificent, wouldn't it? I am inspired by transcontinental regional intercity rail the way that As a child, I was inspired by the moon missions. Agnes and I were just looking at a map of West Virginia the other day, and just for the fun of it, plotting out what a light rail system would look like here. Man, it would be nice. Agnes is all inspired, having ridden around on the D.C. Metro for the first time. She kind of liked it. So do I. She enjoyed the rail system in Pittsburgh a few years ago. If you're not around it and you are exposed to it, you come away from it going, wow, that's cool. Because no parking hassles, nothing. Just get on the train, go where you're going, get off the train, go where you're going, come home. And you really can't, unless you live in a place that has no mass transit whatsoever, maybe it's a little bit hard to understand why that would be such a novelty. But we do. We live in a place where when she says, honey, we're out of milk, it's a 12-mile round trip. And that's a bunch of gas, a bunch of time. And the idea of being able to get somewhere and go and do something and then with any ease at all, oh, it's refreshing. Just imagine. Imagine. That rail network. With our cities connected to each other again. Because, you see, airlines, they don't really connect places. Rail networks do. Get on a train in D.C. and comfortably and quickly wind up in New Orleans. Or Miami, and be able to do so comfortably and economically. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And since you're talking about the longest span being 600 miles at 150 miles an hour, that's a four-hour ride. Maybe a little bit more with stops and so forth. But that's stirring. That could, in the midst, and I like this story, I like this idea, because in the midst of all of this secessionist garbage that is being spewed by the right wing, all this separatism, all this divisiveness, here is a plan that rather than dividing us, would unite us. And we are desperately in need of being united. Because you understand that the entire goal of the right wing is to tear us apart. Division was the order of the day for 8 years during George W. Bush's nightmare tenure. Division was what the right wing pushed through the witch hunting of Bill Clinton. Division was what the Republicans lived and breathed during the reigns of Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush, when the word liberal was turned into something dirty and nasty. This is perhaps a chance for us to rise above and rise out of that generation of division. Here's a for instance. Chicago would be the hub of the Midwest regional rail system. It would go to Madison, Wisconsin, St. Louis, Missouri, and Detroit. With, I assume, stops along the way. a southeast, a Gulf Coast. A Gulf Coast, what? Maybe Houston to New Orleans to Mobile, Pensacola. Wow. Just wow. Rail lines through Nashville again, finally. Do you realize there's no passenger rail in the center of the South, the upper South? The Cardinal runs from Amtrak's Cardinal runs from Chicago to the Northeast, sort of. And it passes through West Virginia. It also passes through northern Kentucky, southern Ohio, Indiana. But nothing for the upper South. This is exciting, inspiring. I mean, you know, my God, what a ride that would be in the Pacific Northwest. What a ride. And somewhere out there, even as we speak, there's a right-winger complaining, "You're going to waste the public's money on damn railroad. Don't need no railroad. Need tax cut. We're going to have to pay taxes to have that railroad." Oh, dear. this just in from our buddy David in South Carolina. I apparently missed the boat. Back in February, our buddy David posted on the forum at headonradionetwork.com. That Mark Sanford, the governor of South Carolina, is actually already ahead of Texas with the secession BS. How did I know? David from South Carolina asks, "Is it 1861 again?" I don't know. I mean, if you look out your window, David, and you see shells lobbing toward something in the harbor, you'll know the game's afoot. Crazy people. Just nuts. Boggles the mind. And of course, this is only a proposal. Some of it will have to be passed in the budget. The stuff in fiscal 2010 will have to get through the Congress. I say get busy on this. Let's get the contracts out for the cars and let Detroit get busy on that. Let's put people to work on it. Let's get this going as quickly as we can. Let's build this with our hands, our sweat, our labor. So it can be something we can all take pride in. I want to ride that train. And I don't see anything in the article on the time frame for completion. I don't even know if they've contemplated that. But anybody, I know Ben Birch, for instance, is a big fan of rail. And I wonder how long it would take to get this thing up and running. I'd love to travel it. I really would. So a little break, come back. You guys are quiet tonight. Chime in if you want to. You know the number, 877-443-2473. 2366 304 658 3333. This is America's listener supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Southern skies, the night he met her, she was married to someone. He was doggedly determined that he would get her. He was old, he was young. From time to time, he'd tip his heart, but each time she withdrew. Everybody loves the sound of the train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. Everybody loves the sound of a train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. Well, eventually the boy and the girl get married. Sure enough, they have a son. And though they both were occupied, the child she carried, disagreements had begun. And in a while it just fell apart. It wasn't hard to do. Everybody loves the sound of a train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. Everybody loves the sound of a train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. Two disappointed believers, two people playing the game. Negotiations and love songs are often mistaken for one and the same. And now the man and the woman, they remain in contact. Let us say it's for the child. With disagreements about the meaning of a marriage contract, conversations hard and wild. But from time to time, he just makes her laugh. She cooks a meal or two. Everybody loves the sound of a train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. Everybody loves the sound of a train in the distance. Everybody thinks it's true. What is the point of this story? What information pertains? The thought that life could be better is woven indelibly into our hearts.
Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. In his big speech at Georgetown, Obama punted when he got to the question of nationalizing the banks. He's against it, he said, because, and I'm quoting, we believe that preemptive government takeovers are likely to end up costing taxpayers even more in the end, and because it's more likely to undermine than to create confidence. Well, that's not a very good answer. First of all, the word preemptive is way off the mark. Nationalizing Citigroup, for instance, wouldn't have been a preemptive action. Look, Citigroup would have gone bust without our funds. And second, how would nationalizing cost taxpayers more in the end? Not nationalizing is costing us more in the beginning. We could have bought Citigroup several times over for the amount of money we've lavished on it already. And bailing the banks out time after time is going to cost us hundreds of billions more down the road. Finally, whose confidence would it actually undermine anyway? A Newsweek poll showed that 56% of the American public favors some bank nationalizations. Their confidence won't be undermined. No, the only group whose confidence Obama is worried about undermining is Wall Street. That's why he's keeping the comatose banks alive in the expensive iron lung that you and I are paying for. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Yeah, so what I said a few minutes ago, maybe an hour ago, I don't know, it all kind of runs together after a while, about 19 minutes before the hour. What I said, we got problems in this country. We got problems desperately in need of fixing. We found out a little bit more about the problems needing fixing today. Contrary to the right wing screaming and howling, some memos were made public today. The Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel memos that laid the legal groundwork for this nation's legacy, history, very nature to be tarnished and besmirched were released today. What do we find out? Oh, waterboarding was just the tip of a very, very dirty iceberg. Oh, yes, yes, yes. These evil bastards who, really, the sadists in the truest sense of the word. Let's see, the first memo. Four memos. The first one, dated August the 1st, 2002. Office of Legal Counsel gives the green light to the CIA to use 10 procedures during the interrogation of Abu Zubaydah. Those tactics included facial slap, sleep deprivation, confinement in a small space, and waterboarding. Also, also on that list, for Jesus, where the heck do I live? Also on that list was putting insects in the confinement box. So they're going to put him in a little tiny, that you've seen Cool Hand Luke, into the box. And then put some bugs in. Office of Legal Counsel put its imprimatur of approval on this based on findings that none of this would cause what it calls, quote, severe physical or mental pain or suffering. That's one of those times when the idea, when severe is a highly fluid and subjective standard. Now, there are entomologists out there and just have little bugs run all over them. I walk through a spider web in the woods, and I'm trying to get the damn thing off of me for the next 3 days because I can still feel it. Bugs? You ever been out pushing the mower and mowed over a yellow jacket's nest and had them angry little bastards come out and lay into you? Really, 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 the question of what is severe is one of those one man's nightshirts, another man's pajamas kind of things. They did this based upon the fact that Zubaydah appears to have a fear of insects. And oddly enough, it's only in the insect paragraph where language is blacked out. Sick bastards.
sick, sick bastards. Oh, it goes on. In the memo, there's an acknowledgement that the use of waterboarding constitutes a threat of imminent death. But you can't... The Office of Legal Counsel under George Bush said, you know, that's really not severe mental pain or suffering because it's not going to be prolonged. And again, there's another one of those sliding scale words. Prolonged to the Office of Legal Counsel under the Bush administration meant lasting months or years. So if you're just fake drowning somebody for a few hours or days or weeks, which are all less than months or years, go for it, guys. Spit on the flag. Because that's what it is. Spitting on the flag, spitting on the Constitution, desecrating everything about this country when we engage in torture, which we damned well did. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, how goes it?
Hanging on.
Oh, God.
Bugs.
Oh, God. No, I just sort of tuned in, so I'm not too sure what the setup was for the evening.
It's been right-wing insanity for well over an hour and a half now, but, you know, it's so, yeah, like that's news. You know, secessionists, torturers, you know, the whole sick range of the panoply of evil.
Well, no, but the thing about that, I mean, I'm sort of trying to figure out, do you think, I mean, are we supposed to actually be taking those tea things seriously? I mean, they're all backed by, you know, corporations and sort of billionaires.
Yeah, but the people participating and being used as the little pawns in the process don't know that.
That's what I'm saying. Why don't they know that, though? You know what I mean?
There's none so blind as those who will not see, Sandra.
Well, no, but I mean, because even when I'm involved in, you know, whatever sort of grassroots stuff here, I always find out exactly what organization I'm, you know what I'm saying? It's just kind of...
Second nature?
Yeah, because, you know, the whole think tank mentality is really, yeah, I don't understand that. So you trying to say I'm in the minority again?
We are, yes.
Wait.
Smart people, where all this stuff is concerned, smart people are in the minority.
No, but those people had children holding them up and, you know, railing at the machine. And I'm just like, people, a propaganda or media organization and billionaires and the Cato Institute. I mean, these people, those groups aren't interested in what those people think they're protesting about. I mean, I don't know. I just am sort of beyond trying to understand, you know, how people can be that malleable at this point.
But, you know, what these think tanks and these right-wing AstroTurf groups are trying to do is by activating as many people as they can, they're trying to find those few that will really go out and do something hateful, stupid, and bloody. And at the same time being able to say, well, we never had any idea all this talk would cause anybody to do that.
Well, no, I'm sort of a bit amazed by the sort of freaking out, you know, by the sort of political arm of their group. It's all sort of shocked that the Department of Homeland Security is putting out papers on their hate. I mean, that's what...
But the Department of the funny thing out of this, and since you had just tuned in, I don't know if you've caught this or not, that study that the right wingers are having such a purple polka dotted blue screaming hissy about, Sandra, was commissioned by the Bush administration.
Well, no, I wasn't even saying that so much as that's what the state does. They evaluate threats domestically and foreign. So these people are so stupid. They vote and drove for Bush, that's okay. But when they think the other group is in, they seem to forget the function of the state capacity. You know, it operates without the people being involved. That's a problem, you know?
Yeah. And
these people are so stupid that they think that everything is, you know, partisan. wake the hell up. Look at
Obama. Look. I mean, look at the again. Look at the acronym for their tea parties. TEA stands for Taxed Enough Already. And apparently Barack Obama's in agreement with him because he cut their taxes. And yet they're still standing there saying taxed enough already?
No, it's just, you know, I just am sort of, I don't know, I'm more disturbed by the Obama administration running around every court trying to squash any look-see into their spying on us.
That is extremely disturbing, and I don't, you know, I don't give a pass on that because it's a Democrat doing it now.
No, I don't give a hell about that. I'm looking at how they said one thing about, oh, well, even we give them immunity, don't worry, the officials can be prosecuted, and then when it's time to go after them, all of a sudden it's a different story coming from, you know, whatever group is in power.
Well, you know, that's what makes what Spain is doing so desperately important.
Well, Spain wouldn't be doing it if we would do it. You see what I mean? They make it clear that they're only doing this because it's not getting done. You see, and if we're operating an accountability on a global scale, which I know is evil because of the one world, you know, paranoia of these types. But, you know, listen, however it gets done, you know what I mean?
Whatever it takes, however it gets done. Whoever does it.
Yes,
I want some accountability for this because, frankly, we impose accountability on working people for far less, but we tell the CIA, that's okay, we're not going to touch you. I can't stomach that.
Well, that's what that Panetta is. That's the kind of leaks that he's putting out there, is that, you know, business as usual.
And I don't know where that mindset comes from, Sandra. Do you?
Well,
I mean, is that just what happens to you when you spend a lifetime inside a bureaucracy? You protect the bureaucracy above all else.
Yeah, no. I keep going back to the state. You know, we are talking about, you know what I mean. What is it that Weber called the state? The only thing that can legally employ force. You see?
Yes.
So it's well beyond just who's in power now, because we've allowed it to grow so much after 9/11. I'm sorry, I go back to that, because everyone was all cowering and freaking out, and in the meanwhile, they were busy enlarging the state, and Obama, whoever else is going to get in, it's just, I don't know. I don't mean to be so cynical, but I'm just looking at this and thinking, you know, this is not too good, you know?
Well, you know, the New York Times story that's out today. I'm sure you saw that.
Yeah, that's hella depressing. Yeah.
You know that the wire, you know, the National Security Agency has suddenly walked into the Oval Office and said, "Whoopsie." No, there's no, you know, come on, there are no accidents. This not in the least. And the first thing I thought of when I saw this story, you know, officials say U.S. wiretaps exceeded law. I thought of that guy coming on Olbermann's show, a day or so before or after the inauguration, saying that everybody and their cousin got listened in on during the political season. You remember that? And, of course, the right wing said, well, that ain't true. That's just conspiracy theory. Well, that guy's crazy.
No, I mean, the technology is there and, you know, people fell asleep on the job. And then they just went buck wild. I just think it's like a Pandora's box, you know? Like they say, you know, they got the Fourth Amendment, and now their eye is on the First, you know?
Well, this Orwellian newspeak stuff that the NSA has said that they over-collected domestic communications of Americans.
Yeah.
They over-collected.
Right, no, that's, you're right, that's scary. That is some scary-ass language. Ooh.
Well, that's, you know, if the garbage men come along and they take away your bags of garbage, and then they come in and they take the family silver, that's not over-collecting, that's stealing. And that's what this is. And the idea that somehow we can first say, well, we're not going to let anybody sue over this, and nobody's going to jail, so now we're going to put out all the rotten crap that was done. And everybody just gets to walk away with it?
Yeah, which is why I always, you know, a few of my buds who are all into the Facebook and stuff, I mean, which is fine, but they don't seem to understand that if you go on a Facebook, you know your shit is just out. That's it. Everything's out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is. I mean,
I don't put pictures of the twins up. You know, I'm sorry. I'm just that kind of person. Whatever I'm saying or doing online, I assume God and everybody else know about it.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And that's why I don't.
I could care less.
No, I mean, I send my emails and get my emails, but it's only fair to you know, for everybody, you know, do this with your eyes open.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Know that this is being spied on.
No, I use it nonstop, but for people who seem to be shocked when something comes down, like an employer fires your ass because they looked at your Facebook, well, what the hell do they think is going to happen? I don't know.
Oh, and a little bad news, Sandra. I'm just hearing from Marty that the presiding judge the Spain's attorney general has let go of the prosecution.
Oh shit! They got the well, you know, Spain is their economy is totally whack. So I mean, God knows what pressure is being put. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, the little you know, just a little genial arm twisting among friends. So
yeah.
It appears less and less likely that there will be any accountability. And for all the respect that I do have for Barack Obama, I don't respect this business of saying that I'm one. You know, where he said, "Well, I'm one of these people who believes we have to look forward and not backward."
No, I find that just that makes me a bit nauseous, and I'm sick of them coddling the financial sector. I'm really done with that. I don't like the sort of civil liberty track they're on. Like I said, I understand there there's a lot of stuff going on, but
Yeah, no, I mean we have to maintain a little bit of intellectual honesty about this, and you're not on board with giving anybody passes because they got a D after their name or whatever letters after their name. Neither am I. And, that look forward and not look back business. Well, if we're always going to be about looking forward and not looking back, then doesn't that sort of vitiate the entire idea of having a criminal justice system? Because we damn sure look back when some kid's caught with a rock in his pocket or some idiot redneck is caught cooking meth in his bathtub next to his, with his baby in the room. We don't look forward and not back on that stuff. No, we look back real hard, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, exactly. I mean, it is. It's absurd. And I thought it was interesting today that Pelosi is announcing some sort of investigative committee for Wall Street. Now, of course, I'm thinking, yeah, whatever, BS. But on the other hand, they must be hearing it. They must be hearing it from folks. I think people are really. Reaching a critical mass with this two-tier justice, financial / I don't know what that's going on because, you don't have to be political to not understand when someone's getting something for nothing and your ass is getting fired. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're reasonable. I don't mean these idiots who are marching around buying up guns and talking about secession. That's a different worry. But just regular folks who are just struggling, anyone can see what's going on, and Obama better be careful because this whole thing could blow his presidency up if he gets bubbled out like I think he's going because people aren't going to stick with this endless creation of money to their detriment,
No, they're not. And see that if you looked at all this teabag and Tea Party stupidity, if you looked at it rationally and stepped back and said, yeah, well, there's a reason for people to be rallying and demanding accountability. I am not in love with the idea of what has gone on with the banks by any stretch of the imagination.
Well, no, and that's a issue that, I would say the majority of the people can agree to, but how it's being played out by these same folks who created it is what's getting me.
Right, and what was ostensibly a protest over spending or taxes, which, you know, we understand was phony. The fact that it turned into this massive anti-Obama the fest, you know, that people were seeing yesterday. There was one depiction of Obama as a shoeshine boy.
Oh, well, okay. So, yeah, everything is always reducible to that factor in this country, isn't it?
You know, there was another, Obama is the new Hitler.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Obama is the Antichrist.
Right. He's Muslim. That whole meme was out there again, right?
And all of this is generated to keep these people ginned up into a moronic frenzy. For when the real stuff hits the fan, there are real issues that are coming along that have serious consequences for working class Americans.
Well,
health care, the Employee Free Choice Act, and now this America Works group has a massive database of emails that it can then in turn use to try to militate against meaningful health care reform or meaningful labor reform in this country on behalf of its corporate clients. And
that's the thing, is always on behalf of, and they do an endless job of masking that. You know, it's like a shell corporations, but in, you know, communicating propaganda. Because if you pull back, every damn time there's some billionaire or some think tank, you know, courtesy of Justice Powell, the Powell memo. You know,
right, yes.
Yeah, man. That, you know, everything is traced. I don't want to say everything's traced to that, but that is an amazing document anyway.
Oh, a lot of chickens go home to roost on that one.
No, man. And it's like, you know, wait the hell. I'm not expecting regular folks to be sitting around, you know, indulging stuff like I do. You know, I'm a freak. You know what I mean? All I do is spend my time connecting the dots. But there's a few dots that are pretty damn easy to connect, Bob.
Well, they're circled with blinking lights and have arrows pointing at them.
And they pertain directly to your life. You know what I mean? And you sit around, you can't get health care or dental care. Wake the hell up. There's a reason for that. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's just, you know, after a while, you have to start thinking a bit bigger. And lots of times when you're looking at a kid that you can't get cured, you know, that's usually a good wake-up call. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
And that's where it's coming down to.
But these people, you know, these people that are on this email list now, those are working. You know, there was a lot of working-class people there yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
These people are being leveraged. So that they will be, they're almost like captive audiences now, because their email inboxes can be bombarded day in and day out. The socialist Obama wants to make sure you can't choose your own doctor. I know the talking points before I've even seen them, Sandra.
No, I mean, it's just, you know, where it was once you don't want to be in the hospital with the Negroes, now it's, you can't have your own doctor. I mean, it's just the same logic, you know, that is suggesting that someone else is going to get something that you have, and we can't have that mentality, right?
Well, precisely. And it even filters down to things like marriage equity, because the insurance industry doesn't like it, because if two people of the same sex are able to get married, then that will extend coverage rights to a spouse, which is much less expensive on a sort of, you know, grand scale of things, than making that second person go out and pay for separate coverage.
Oh, right. So you're saying that the same sex marriage movement is going to face the kind of opposition like the liquor industry did with the women's vote, huh?
There you go.
That's a good one. I hadn't even, I got it. Hey, I had to write that down. That's it, man. You're killing me.
I've been turned into a brutally cynical individual, Sandra, not by my own choice, but just by what I see these people doing day in and day out. Everything has a dollar sign somewhere at the end of the equation.
No, and what I see is patterns in history is just the same. I don't care how many flashing lights of technology you put up. Everything is just some awful cycle because, and then people here in America, they don't seem to be able to even embrace history, you know?
Embrace it? Learn it.
You can always find it. You can always find the similar situation. Just open a book, man.
And, well, it's not just the failure to learn history or disinterest in history. It's those people out there, Sandra, as well, who are actively engaged in completely falsifying history. The Glenn Beck yesterday saying, the framers of the Constitution, there's no way they'd say that you couldn't secede. The Union is not a suicide pact. I haven't heard arguments like that since stuff that I was reading coming out of South Carolina in 1855.
Ah, you know, but the point is that you can find the same stuff being regurgitated every time, you know, they want to deal with a minority group or someone trying to flex, you know, trying to get a right. And these corporations, Jesus, wow. Anyway, I want to see people mobilize, but really not like that was yesterday. That's an abomination, that.
And it is that because of where it came from. It was conceived to be that. I mean, if you go and look at the history of, you know, teaparty.com or whatever that website is, you'll find that thing was registered long ago, and lo and behold, it was right-wing operatives who put it together. This thing, there was, again, I guess we're preaching to the converted, but there was nothing spontaneous about it.
Exactly. I mean, it just makes me.
I mean, it, all you have to do is look at the larger of these events, that thing in San Antonio. The larger ones, I mean, my God, look at the staging. You know, John Fox, our chief engineer and host of a program and all the other things that he does, John Fox in another life dealt with things like setting up for big, humongous events. Mm-hmm. And you know, he could tell you, this thing, you know, when it ain't Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland saying, let's go put on a play in the barn. This stuff was logisticized. It had complete communications behind it. It had everything that the corporate right-wing world could put behind it.
And it was no security state to beat them down. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah.
No beat down.
The only thing that happened is when they threw the foreign articles over the fence at the White House, they got their party busted up at Lafayette Park. But no, nobody was dragged away. Nobody was spied on. There was no one doing violence to them. There were no rows upon rows of riot cops with shields and all of that stuff. And here are people who are talking actual active violence against the government. And by the government, I mean we the people.
No, I understand. That's why I'm so amazed by the explosion of whatever with these people freaking out about the, you know, militia groups that are.
Did I lose you?
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Just some other call.
Oh, that was your beep. Okay.
Yeah, anyway, I should let you go. I just wanted to check in and, you know.
Well, I mean, what are you seeing out where you are? I mean, was it zany out there yesterday? Did you get near any of this stuff?
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
No, because I was, you know, taking care of the girls, and, you know, we were just doing what we do. I'm not going to, oh, God, no. But I guess they did have, a few events around.
Well, I know Neil Cavuto was out that way somewhere, so.
Yeah, he was in Sacramento, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that, yeah, you know what? What is up with the propaganda network? They're like, seriously, creating events. Isn't there something warped about?
I've never seen anything quite like this. I think we can say officially that we've thought it before, but I mean, this is really it. Fox News Channel has really, really, and for truly, finally jumped the shark.
But it isn't akin to like Hearst. It's worse than that, right?
Yeah, I mean, this is, well, I mean, there's a phrase for it. This is yellow journalism.
Okay, yeah. So it is in the same vein, but they're just so, they're horrible. Their whole sort of persona is gross. At least Hearst was kind of, you know, had some entertainment value. These people are foul.
Yeah, you get me the pictures, and I'll put, what was that that you said about the Spanish-American War or the Maine or whatever? You just get me the picture, and I'll give you the war.
Oh, yeah, no, he didn't mess around. I mean, it's pretty scary. But this is scary because I get the impression that, and they're trying to pretend that this is something that is germane, you know, just sort of organic. I mean, I can't believe they're trying to put that out there.
But they are.
It's the left, they need to quit with the, you know, the whole teabagging thing. That's a bit tired. I don't care about that anymore.
I'd be so over the whole lot of them, Sandra, if they weren't so damn dangerous.
It is really scary. But anyway, listen, you have a good evening.
All right, you take care. Good hearing from you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. It is scary. I mean, Lord, you know, what we were talking about earlier. These, you've got an actual lawmaker talking about shooting the governor? That's insane. I mean, that is just crazy insane. Shooting people, oh, God. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, I just dialed in and got you.
Well, hey, Juanita, how are you?
I'm okay. I've been gone, and I did hear a little bit of Sanders, so that was nice. I was just calling about situations. I just wanted to tell you about something they said on yesterday's View.
Okay.
About the tea bags parties.
Mm-hmm.
Barbara started talking about it, and she said that, she said, I'm just getting all these emails about it. She said, I'm getting emails left and right, you know, and Elizabeth said, well, you know, it's a grassroots movement. You know, it's just a sudden thing. And Barbara said, no. She said, I wouldn't be getting all these emails if it was just a sudden thing. So this is organized. I thought that was pretty good.
Beautiful.
But I didn't see him today. I didn't wake up until about 12:30.
Sleeping in and living the life of leisure, are you, Juanita?
Uh-huh. Yeah. But anyway, I was wanting to talk something about, I don't know. I tried to find some of those teabag shows, and there wasn't a whole lot that I found. Of course, I didn't look here, there, and everywhere, but I don't know. It just kind of made me sick. But I did hear people talking about, and a lot of those people that went, and I think you mentioned something like that to Sandy, they really weren't part of them. They're just people that are kind of like, they just can't accept a black president, and they just don't know what to do with himself.
They are at their wit's end, the end of their rope. They're apoplectic with rage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, but people like that are not known for being rational.
No.
And they scare me, Juanita. They just do.
I was just, it just made me sick, and I just said, oh, well, I'm not going to worry about it.
I've never spent one day being worried about Osama bin Laden. I got to tell you the truth. I haven't.
No.
But you know what? These people, because they walk among us, scare me. They scare the daylights out of me. They make you look at your fellow man in a completely different light.
They've been doing this for so long, too, you know, and kind of a lot of it kind of underhanded. I mean, Russia's been out there for quite a while, but they've been more underhanded in the past. And they, like I say, they've been doing it for a long time. It isn't just something that popped up. And then they wanted to get mad because people were talking about them teabagging. You know, I guess they finally figured out what that's supposed to be. But they're the ones. They're the ones that did that.
You're absolutely correct.
So, you know, it reminds me of, you know, when they did the purple Band-Aids
all the...
Malkin, yeah.
Yeah.
At the Republican convention. And I think you and I talked about it one time about, you know, you can get a teeny tiny bleed, and if you get a bleeder, you can bleed to death.
Yes, you can.
And they're mocking and making fun. And to me, that's what a lot of them that I saw, that's what they were doing, just mocking and making fun. And but, you know, they're doing, I said, you know, be careful what you want. You might get it. I don't think they really know what they want. I just don't think they know what they really want. They don't want the United States. They don't want what America's supposed to be. They don't want what's in the Constitution. They don't want that. So if they want to succeed, I would like them to have their own country. I don't want them to take my part of the country. I don't want to take, I'm sure there's a lot of people in, like, well, you're almost deep south and,
yeah,
you know, or like close to deep south, but you know, like Mississippi and Alabama places, they don't want to, there's not, everybody's not wanting that kind of a life.
Well, let's see, Mississippi and Alabama could secede, and then they could erase their common border and create a state called Miss-Obama.
Yeah. But it's really sad, you know, I feel like God has really given us a second chance, and I mean, I know the man's not perfect, but neither am I, and you know, but I think he's an amazing man that we have ahead of this country. And, you know, Susan was talking about you know, what they're trying to do, basically. They're trying to get rid of him. They don't care how.
Well, that's the be-all and end-all of this. To a certain extent, no, if... Look, I mean, let's try to have a little perspective here, Juanita, and I don't mean you, I mean us generally.
Yeah.
Let's understand something. If Hillary Clinton was the president of the United States now, there would be hateful, sexist, nasty protests going on. This would, and what I'm trying to point out here, this would have happened with any Democratic president,
because this
eliminationist right-wing machine, this is how it operates. But by virtue of the fact that Barack Obama has skin darker than pasty white, darker than, you know, that kindergarten edible paste or whatever, because of that, it makes them just a little bit crazier.
Yeah.
Because that awful, hateful seed of racism is buried so, planted so deep inside the right-wing psyche that anything they do is going to be motivated or exacerbated by that to one degree or another.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they don't really know what, they just don't know what they're doing to themselves. And I saw Obama today talking about having a rail system in our country, and I thought, oh, my God, that'd be so wonderful.
Yes.
And he was saying, you know, that some people say you can't do that here. And he said, why not? They're doing it in other countries. Why can't we do it here? We can. And I think that would be so great. You know, sometimes, like, you go into work, always my problem was getting to work, you know, transportation, broken down vehicles, all that kind of junk. And if you walk to work, you put your life in somebody else's hands. And, cause I know I've walked to work for, I forget how long, and people trying to pick you up and everything else. And sometimes you're tempted to let them pick you up if it starts raining.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, it just, and it's worse now. It's far worse now if you try to walk to work or anything. It's a lot more dangerous. And I don't know, it's just, and the congestion, you know, that's, it's just so frustrating to have to drive those roads. See, I'm the type of person, I don't like the traveling. I mean, once I've seen the scenery, then I just want to be where I want to go. And I would love to have like a, you know, like I have on Star Trek.
Transporter.
Well, yeah. I would love to want to go
and you're there.
And just be there. You know.
Yeah, well, after you've made the same trip a few times, you feel like you've seen what there is to see.
Right.
The novelty wears off in a hurry.
Right. And you get into all this traffic that just can drive you crazy. I was going to a doctor for a while, just like 50 miles away, and you get in a certain amount of traffic, and you're just there. You're just sitting there for hours, seems like. And we really do need something to cut down on the congestion of the traffic. We really do need it badly. If you say it wasn't going to force it on states, you know, the states that would ask for it.
But, yeah, I mean, to have meaningful rail transportation, it's that, heck, that's inspiring, that's soaring, that's ambitious.
Yeah.
And it also has the added benefit of putting people to work.
Oh, definitely. It takes a lot of jobs, a lot of them.
And the thing is, because it's federal monies, unless there's something hinky going on with the funding legislation, those are all going to be what's called prevailing wage jobs.
Yeah.
Which means that they are going to be good paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thanks again to organized labor. And so it won't just employ people, it will employ people well.
Oh, yeah. I know my daddy and my mother during World War II, they both worked. My daddy worked in the shipyard, and my mother worked at MacDill Air Force Base or Drewfield. They had two in Tampa. I know MacDill is still there, but I don't know about Drewfield. But anyway, she cleaned the guns, you know, that were in the planes. She mm-hmm. took them apart and cleaned them. That was her job. And I remember my daddy said he never made more money in his life than he made during that time. But that's not a good reason to make it. But, yeah, the government job was good. You know, rather than depending on these private individuals who are semi-tied of dictators is what I'm trying to think of. And, I don't know, it's just a whole attitude, you know, is the attitude that like on your jobs and all like that where, you know, where you're just supposed to be used. Where
you're no different than a pick or a shovel or a cash register or any other machine that's a part of the process.
You got it.
And if you wear out and keel over and die, they'll just go get them a new one.
Oh, yeah. And honest to God, I think that they don't care about we the little people because they would love to get rid of us and get some more cheaper people. They just want to be so many of them.
Exactly.
And get rid of us and get all these other people from other countries.
Anybody who has a working understanding of how important the worker is in the production process and knows what the game is and sees the handwriting on the wall, those people are always an annoyance and a hindrance and a detriment to businesses' attempt to maximize profit and minimize cost.
Yeah, and you know, to me, that's what it should be, what it's for. Is to help the people that work for them. That should be the number one. That should be above any kind of a machinery or anything. To me, I think that should come first. If you don't want to pay people a decent wage,
you ought not be in business.
You ought not to be in business.
Precisely. You know, I've got an article here from a couple of days ago from the New York Times, an Associated Press article, headline, Iowa, personnel manager at meat plant pleads guilty. Now, do you remember, Juanita, the story of the kosher slaughterhouse agri-processors in Postville, Iowa? They had a huge, during the Bush administration, there was a huge ICE man raid there, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, rounded up hundreds of immigrant workers, took them to a stockyard and kept them penned up there. It was a total nightmare. Well, this is one of those good signs. It's frustrating when you see the Obama administration saying, well, we're going to give a pass to this one, and we're going to give a pass to that one, and you're not going to get busted for spying, and you won't get busted for torturing anybody. But this is one of the good signs. The former personnel manager at Agriprocessors, a 48-year-old woman by the name of Elizabeth Billmeyer, has pleaded guilty to one count, and listen to the name of this crime, one count of conspiracy to harbor undocumented immigrants for profit.
Yeah.
And one count of knowingly accepting counterfeit resident alien cards. Those two counts, she's facing up to 20 years in prison and a $500,000 fine. And I realize she was just middle management or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is one of those moments where it where the outcome matters, Juanita. This woman faces up to 20 years in prison and a $500,000 fine, and I will say here right now that I hope she gets every last minute of it and every last dime of it imposed on her.
This woman
was a trafficker in human flesh.
Yeah, right. And you know that, like, you know, in your companies, a lot of the people working there, they are so far the bosses. They're so far the company. They don't care either, as long as they've got what they've got. And they will do things. They'll do all kinds of things, not necessarily that bad. But, you know, the more that goes on than just her, a whole lot more.
Absolutely.
And they found, even down here in Florida, they found places, and I suspect it was going on even in my neighborhood, where these young girls, and they constantly, different ones are living there, and even young boys, and they go to a private school, and they're always having them working in the yard. They're, you know, they don't go anywhere. And they did find that there was some over in Tampa, and this was after the ones over here had moved. And they were trafficking those girls and boys, and God only knows how much of that is going on. We just have no idea. There's just so much brutality, and it's the attitudes of people like Beck and so forth. I mean, what a sickening person. Even some of the people that I heard talking over C-SPAN calling in, they said they were going, but some of them did. There were some people in Georgia didn't want to go because the one they were going to go to, I'm talking about the teabag thing, that was going to be headed up by Hannity, and they didn't like Hannity. They didn't want to go where he was. Imagine that. But it is pathetic. It's really sad, sad, sad.
Oh, it is. And you know, the degree, and like you note, the degree to which it goes on.
Yeah, yeah. But before I forget, I wanted to say one more thing about what you were talking about with Susan. You know, you were talking about yesterday and I think last week too. And you were talking about, you know, what they want to do. And I think the difference between the times now and the times then, we don't have a Robert Kennedy to get up and tell black people that Martin Luther King has just been slandered, you know, slaughtered.
Yeah, we don't.
We had like James Brown, the singer. You know, he did a lot of peaceful things too. I mean, I know they had a certain amount of protest. I know that, but it could have been a whole lot worse. And I'm not talking about just in the black community. I'm talking about all oppressed people. And that includes me. And I see where Susan's coming from because, you know, I lived in that time, too. It's like every time you turn around, the greatest ones were assassinated and taken away from you. I felt that way when they took away Al Gore, when they robbed us of having Al Gore.
Oh.
And we got that other monstrosity for 8 years.
You know, it's painful even to think about, isn't it, Juanita?
It certainly is.
Because I think what the progress this nation could have made in the last 8 years, instead of all of this just backward, ignorant, bloodthirsty, business that we've been engaged in, You know, it, you can look at Al Gore and say, okay, we wouldn't be in a war in Iraq. We probably wouldn't be in Afghanistan.
Right.
And if Al Gore had been allowed to take the office that he actually legitimately won,
right?
I'll go so far, Juanita, as to say that there would not have been a September 11th, 2001.
I think so too.
Because among other things, shortly after taking office, George W. Bush had placed on his desk the something called the Hart-Rudman Report.
Uh-huh.
And that was an overview of domestic airport security.
Yeah.
And it said clearly, somebody's going to try to do something awful, and they're going to try to do it soon, and here's what we need to do to fix the situation.
Yeah.
If those and what you know what George Bush did with it? He passed it over to FEMA. Now Brownie wasn't there yet, but Brownie's boss was, and he wasn't much better. George Bush passed it to FEMA and said, "Dad, here, I think this is for you."
Yeah.
And nothing was done.
And you know, another thing, we were talking about assassinations. You know, do you remember? You were talking about churches, about the ones where they're shot up. Do you remember? You might have been too small. I don't know, but you know, after Martin Luther King had been killed, did you know that his church in Atlanta? They went and killed his mama, right in church.
Lord.
Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Yeah. They killed his mother right there in church. Lord. Yeah, you probably were still a kid then.
Well, I was five when Dr. King was murdered. And I remember the hooting and hollering and celebrating that the white folks did.
Yeah. Well, they did that when Kennedy was killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I almost got to where I almost knew how they felt in reverse about Bush. But, you know, I would not want anything to happen to that man except to go to prison.
That's all. Just justice.
That's all. And I
just
want
justice.
I don't want him to be tortured. But I want him to go. I want him to be in prison. I don't want him to be in a country club.
Yeah, no club fed.
Guantanamo would be a good place.
Yeah, or that maximum security joint. You know, he could sit there and play backgammon with the blind cheek and the Unabomber for a while.
Oh yeah, yeah. And well, you know that Cheney, you know, said it was like a country club down there in Guantanamo.
Go soak up the sun, George.
So,
Dick.
Yeah, we could even give him free plane rides to overseas.
Exactly.
I wouldn't mind that. It wouldn't be us. But, you know, I mean, I think we'll never rest until there's some kind of justice for us.
No, you're absolutely right, Juanita. And I just got an email in from our buddy Maura. And she makes a very valid point. She said if Gerald Ford had some guts... And instead of pardoning pardoning Nixon, many of today's problems on many levels wouldn't be happening.
Yeah.
And she makes the assertion. She said Ford made sure we could not learn from history, and she's absolutely correct.
Yeah, I agree with her.
You know, all this stuff has roots.
Yeah.
And some of those roots lie in the fact that Richard Nixon was allowed to get away with what Richard Nixon was allowed to get away with.
Yeah, and at the time it made me angry. I was so upset about that. And, you know, but, it just like all the ones in Iran-Contra, you know, Bill Clinton should have done something about that.
But that's the thing. Barack Obama is making the same fundamental mistake that Bill Clinton made, because Bill Clinton made the same argument, Juanita. He said, well, we can't be looking backwards and trying to punish the people who did evil things and bad things and broke the law. We've just got to learn from it and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next thing Bill Clinton knew, there was a Republican Congress that was impeaching his rear end.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's all you could hear.
I would not hesitate a minute to say that some sort of similarly unfortunate consequence will come
of Barack Obama's refusal to enforce the law against against people. I mean, you know, these are kind of open and shut cases.
Yeah, definitely. But somebody, I guess, somewhere is scared. I don't know. I just don't know.
Nor I. Well, good talking to you, Juanita. You have a wonderful evening. I'm glad you had a good charge on your phone this time.
Yeah, me and my son, we went out. I was trying to find me some more seeds. I'm trying to start a garden.
Oh, wonderful. What are you planting?
Well, I've already got some tomatoes and squash coming up. I'm hoping they'll survive. And I went and I got some string beans and onions and I forget what all I got.
Half runners?
What?
Half runners?
What is that? I don't
know
that.
Your green beans?
I like the thin ones.
Okay.
I don't know that. I like the real thin ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the snap.
Yeah.
I don't like those thick ones in particular because they get stringy.
I grew some one year. I grew Kentucky Wonders.
Uh huh.
And those things were more string than bean. I stringed them. And we sat there and snapped and strung and snapped and strung. And I cooked up a big old pot, and it was like somebody had unwound a spool of green thread into it.
Mm-hmm.
Could not get rid of the strings. So
I'm gonna get me some vegetables out. I got me I forget the name of the bulbs planted too. They're supposed to smell real good. They're freesias. You ever heard?
Heard of those. Yeah,
they're supposed to smell real good. But I'm mostly gonna concentrate on vegetables this time.
Well, I tell you, my favorite green bean is one called Aroma, R-O-M-A. And it's sort of a flat green bean, and instead of being a climber, it's a bush bean.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no strings to them. You snap them in two. You cook them with.
I would love that. Yeah.
Cook them with a little piece of bacon and.
Cornbread.
Yes.
Without any sugar in it.
Hallelujah! Hallelujah! Testify, Juanita. Testify.
Yeah, amen, brother.
Well, I hope you get your garden in and. I hope you get some good eats out of it.
I want to get me some chickens.
Mm. We thought about doing that here.
Yeah, my neighbor's got them. They've got a couple of pigs too. Now we live out in a rural section, and we didn't know it was okay. You know, as long as it's not by your house, but it is. And they've got their pigs are pets. They're huge.
Oh dear.
And, one of them's called Candy. Honey, she's big. Big white, you know, almost white.
Yeah, like a Poland China?
Yeah. And, the other one's black and white. Not the pot belly, but anyway, another kind. And, they've got venom chickens that they let them wander. And I'm gonna tell you, this is funny to me. They've got some neighbors that's got regular chickens, and their chickens goes over and jumps on to their regular chickens. And
neighbors came over
and said, your chickens are picking on our chickens.
All them bannies are obnoxious.
Oh, it's something to see. And they'll go in and eat part of the pig's food and, you know, have no fear of the pigs.
See, I can't conceive of the idea of a pet pig. That's just, you know,
keeping pigs?
Pet
really?
Pig? Well, no, pet, I mean, I know people do, but I can't look at one and not see bacon.
Yeah.
I'm just a bad person.
I love pigs. I do.
I do too. All smothered in a nice tangy barbecue sauce.
Yeah. But boy, when you have them for a pet, you just don't want to do that.
No, and they're so smart.
They're brilliant, yeah.
And a pleasure to be around. A lot more fun than geese. Geese are mean.
I sure hope I can get some plants going. I want a ton of squash. Y'all were talking about the
zucchini?
The squash that takes over?
Yeah, zucchini.
Yeah. I got some gray zucchini. See if that'll do.
Well, just don't let them get big because they get hard and woody. You got to pick them young and tender.
Yeah.
I was the
yellow was my favorite.
I was watching Tony Bourdain the other night. And he was at a place where they were doing a
classic Mexican dish of fried squash blossoms with some queso fresco, you know, the fresh farmer kind of cheese stuffed into them and then just fried. Oh, that looks so good. And I got to thinking, I wonder which kind of squash I should grow, because I've heard before that squash blossoms are real good eating.
I haven't ever eaten those.
But I'm going to try some.
Yeah. Well, you know, I love to fry, you know, fried squash.
Oh, mercy.
The yellow squash.
Oh, yeah, and yellow crookneck squash. Mercy.
Yeah, I could just eat that.
During the times, and of course the growing season is shorter here than it is where you are, Juanita, but during the times when the garden's in, I could pretty much be a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Just eating good stuff out of the garden.
Yeah, yeah.
So hopefully we'll get some ground busted up and have a few rows of Silver Queen corn.
Oh, that'd be nice. I thought some kind of corn. I don't know. It was supposed to be sweet.
Yeah. Well, I've had more luck with Silver Queen than just about any. Of course, they're all hybrids, so, you know, that's no fun.
Trying to avoid that name. I don't know if that's it. I don't think that's good, is it?
A hybrid? No. But it's what you wind up with.
Yeah. So you don't know what you're really getting anyway, right?
Well, no. I mean, with Silver Queen's a hybrid. There's all kinds of different early sun glow, blah blah blah. But I've had more luck with Silver Queen than anything else.
I just hope I can get some crops going.
Well, just remember, your tomatoes aren't going to do anything until the ground temperature reaches 72 degrees, or so I'm told.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've had cold snaps here, you know, so I don't know.
Oh, I've been thinking spring wasn't going to get here. This seems like the first sunny day we've had in nearly forever.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of sunny, but, you know, we had that tornado weather the other day, and then it turned cold, and not as cold as it did about a month ago, but still, you know.
At this point in time, anything cool is colder than the dead of winter, it feels like to me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because you're so used to being hot, and then all of a sudden it's cold. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay.
Well, have yourself a good evening.
And talk. You too.
Don't you worry. Bye. You take care, Juanita. Bye now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, and there's the gardening segment of tonight's program. Want me a garden? Want me some fresh tomatoes, heirloom tomatoes? Woo! Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, just to back up for a minute. I was pleased to see that story of Elizabeth Billmeyer pleading guilty. Conspiracy to harbor undocumented immigrants for profit. I didn't know there was such a crime. I'm glad there's such a crime. Because that's basically a conspiracy to slave. Conspiracy to enslave. And I would imagine what's going on, because I haven't seen resolution on it. The former CEO of Agriprocessors, a monster by the name of Shalom Rubashkin, has also been indicted. He was indicted back back at the end of October of 2008. He was charged. He was charged, among other things, with abetting aggravated identity theft, among others. And I would guess that in light of the fact that a couple of his employees, Juan Carlos Guerrero Espinoza and Martin De La Rosa, have already pleaded guilty to harboring charges, Laura Althaus, a human resources manager, has pled guilty. And now this Elizabeth Billmeyer has pled guilty. I guess I would hope that they're all going to be dropping the dime on Shalom Rubashkin. Because this man, trafficking in human flesh is about as sick a thing as one human being can do, short of rape or murder. And this man did it by the hundreds. All for the sole purpose of making a little more money. Put him under the chain. So it's a quarter before the hour. We're just about out of time for tonight's program. And I wanted to share something with you from Robert Perry at Consortium News. Writing about the media, because I like to round things out a little bit. Started talking about media, finish up talking about media, with a little of this and that in the middle. Robert Perry writes, "Watching Glenn Beck of Fox News rant about progressive fascism and muse about armed insurrection, or listening to mainstream pundits prattle on about Barack Obama as the most polarizing president ever, it is hard to escape the conclusion that today's U.S. news media represents a danger to the republic. By and large, the Washington press corps continues to function within a paradigm set in the 1980s, mostly bending to the American right, especially to its perceived power to destroy mainstream journalistic careers and to grease the way toward lucrative jobs for those who play ball. The parameters set by this intimidated or bought-off news media, in turn, influence how far Washington politicians feel they can go on issues like health care reform or environmental initiatives, or I would add, labor issues, or how risky they believe it might be to pull back from George W. Bush's war on terror policies. Democratic this is the big flashing lights and arrows pointing at the paragraph part. Democratic hesitancy on these matters then inflames the left, which expresses its outrage through its own small media, reprising the old theme that there's not a dime's worth of difference between Democrats and Republicans, a reaction that further weakens chances of any meaningful reform. This vicious cycle has repeated itself again and again since the Reagan era, when the right built up its intimidating media apparatus, a vertically integrated machine which now reaches from newspapers, magazines, and books to radio, TV, and the Internet. The right accompanied its media apparatus with attack groups to go after troublesome mainstream journalists. The right accompanied its media apparatus with attack groups to go after troublesome mainstream journalists. And here, please, cymbals, gongs, fireworks. Meanwhile, the American left never took media seriously, putting what money it had mostly into organizing or into direct humanitarian giving. Underscoring the left's fecklessness about media, progressives have concentrated their relatively few media outlets in San Francisco, 3,000 miles away and 3 hours behind the news centers of Washington and New York. By contrast, and this has been out for a while, you may have seen it, by contrast, the right grasped the importance of information warfare in a modern media age and targeted its heaviest firepower on the front lines of that war, mostly the political battlefields of Washington, thus magnifying the influence of right-wing ideas on policymakers. One consequence of this media imbalance is that Republicans feel they can pretty much say whatever they want, no matter how provocative or even crazy, while Democrats must be far more circumspect, knowing that any comment might be twisted into an effective attack point against them. Wow. Let that all sink in. Consortiumnews.com is where you'll find this. Robert Perry is the author. Republicans feel they can pretty much say whatever they want, no matter how provocative or even crazy, while Democrats must be far more circumspect, knowing that any comment might be twisted into an effective attack point against them. Now, what was that we had earlier? What was that quote? Mark Kirk, Republican. "I think the people of Illinois are ready to shoot anyone who's going to raise taxes." shoot. Shoot means kill. And he's going to get away with it. It's not a secret. He's going to get away with it. He's going to get away with it just as I told you about Representative Peter King of New York will get away with his claim that we should not be looking at right-wing terrorists in this country, but that rather all the problems are coming from mosques. He's going to get away with it. All for the same reasons that Robert Perry points out. Republicans can pretty much say whatever they want, no matter how provocative or even crazy, while Democrats must be far more circumspect. Tom DeLay can talk secession with Chris Matthews, and he'll still be invited back. Tom DeLay has nothing to say. Tom DeLay is yesterday's news and yesterday's right-wing crook. Tom DeLay will get away with talking that crap. Because, as Perry writes, the right grasped the importance of information warfare in a modern media age and targeted its heaviest firepower on the front lines of that war, thus magnifying the influence of right-wing ideas on policymakers. Tom DeLay will get away with what he did because Republicans, as Robert Perry says, can pretty much say whatever they want, no matter how provocative or even crazy, while Democrats must be far more circumspect. It's just true. Day in and day out, this insanity floods the for-profit media. And there's not a damn thing you or I can do about it except turn it the hell off and participate in something new, something fresher, something more honest, something more straightforward. Look, I don't pretend toward balance. I don't think you can have balance when one idea is rational and arguably doable, and the counter argument is just nuts. Presenting the crazy idea alongside the sane idea and presenting them both as sane is not only dishonest, it's dangerous. So I do not pretend to I won't put right-wing craziness out there and say, well, we could do the crazy thing or we could do the sane thing and then claim I'm balanced. You and I, we've lived through 8 years of absolute crazier than a sprayed roach nuttiness. And we're desperately trying to put it behind us. It remains to be seen whether we will succeed. See, too much seceding earlier and now succeed. It remains to be seen whether we will succeed. There are glimmers of hope. There are glimmers of forward progress. It often seems one step forward and two steps back, though, because for every glimmer of forward progress with something like national rail, we take a step backwards by saying, well, the people who relied on the president's lawyers and tortured people should not be prosecuted. Not only should they not be prosecuted, they should not even be investigated. Dig the import of that. Not even investigated. We can't even try to learn from this mistake. And it was a mistake. It was a horrible mistake. It was a horrible transgression. It was, in short, a crime. Torture. Repeatedly. Torture. And we've no interest in even learning from it? Oh, President Obama, I strongly fear you are making a profound mistake on this. If we can prosecute traffickers in human flesh, if we can prosecute kids caught with a rock of crack in their pocket, if we can prosecute all the vast panoply of human wickedness that are cataloged within our criminal codes, state and federal, but we can't prosecute torturers or domestic spies. If we can't do that, then the entire underpinning of our criminal justice system is at risk. And it would appear, from statements coming out of the White House, that that is the case. Our criminal justice system, its entire foundation of unbiased investigation and prosecution of those who break the laws, it's at risk. Because a two-tiered justice system has emerged and is growing. And guess what? Ain't none of you, and I'm not, and no one I know is, privileged to be on that second tier where violations of the law are winked at. So that's the program for tonight. Thank you for joining in. Hope you'll be with me tomorrow evening. Front Porch Friday, you know. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to all of you, and you know who you are, who step up month in and month out, however you can, to make sure that this experiment continues. Thank you. Thank you to Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org, the other part of the process by which we remain on the air. They are the hardest working, bravest people I know. And they work tirelessly for all of us because we are all downstream. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Thank you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Good to be live with you here on the Head On Radio Network. I've been off for a couple weeks until yesterday. Of course, 2 weeks ago, Bob was, the horn was closed because Bob was doing his very, very important work to stop the mountain bombing throughout Appalachia, the destruction of, well, all that's good and holy and wonderful there, all the plants and trees and birds and mountains to bomb a mountain and ruin the environment and get a little bit of coal. And then last week, of course, was Passover, and I was home with my family in Nashville, Tennessee, having a terrific time with them. And so it is really good back to be live with you. And being back live, I realized I really hadn't had a chance over the last 2 weeks to discuss with you the terrific twofer, actually it's a threefer, of Iowa, Vermont, and the District of Columbia. And I'm proud to say I'm going to play a part in the District of Columbia, and I'll get to that in a second. First, of course, came Iowa. And Iowa was a surprise for many. I admit it, I was a little surprised myself, but not that surprised. Iowa has a long history of progressivism, even though it is in the heart of the Midwest, it is mostly rural, even though it is right on the line of the red-blue divide. It was solidly blue, of course, for Barack Obama. But in the first two elections, it went for Gore, and then it went against Kerry by very, very close margin. But out in the heartland, people seem to think that people are, by definition, homophobic. And that's certainly true in some parts of the heartland. Certainly in my home state of Tennessee, outside the big cities, you will find a good bit of homophobia. But Iowa does have a progressive tradition. I think it's important to point out that this almost entirely white state, probably one of the whitest states in the United States, I'm sure it's over 95% white, was, of course, an early supporter of Barack Obama, giving him the caucus win over Hillary Clinton that indeed lit a fire under his campaign. And if he had not won Iowa, I doubt he'd be president today. Iowa was also, you may not be aware of this, one of the earliest states with regard to women's rights. Iowa admitted women to the state bar prior to any other state in the United States. And Iowa has a long history of basically saying, you know what you do in the privacy of your home, it's just none of our business. And so I was proud of the Iowa Supreme Court, and particularly proud that it was a unanimous decision. The Iowa Supreme Court, it wasn't one of those split decisions. I mean, even the California decision was only 4-3. The Massachusetts decision was a split decision. This was the first unanimous decision. And it shows that it's building steam. Even in the wake of Proposition 8, one thing that is always true about civil rights is it's always two steps forward, one step back. And if you don't remember the civil rights era and you haven't studied it, you really should. Because you'll see that civil rights is not ever a full march forward. And I say this because many people who support equality for all, who support equality for gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people, were so disheartened by Proposition 8 that, well, both the gay community and many straight people who fully support equality were in a bit of a funk. Here it was, California, home of San Francisco and Los Angeles, the state that starts the trends that go across America. I mean, San Francisco is the epitome of a gay-friendly city. Here they are voting by a narrow margin to take away